Welcome to episode 19 of the Sign Radio Show. In the final episode of the year, our outgoing producers join to discuss their work and hopes for the podcast and the scene.
Welcome to the Sign Radio Show, episode 19, last episode of the year.
Yay.
I'm Oki.
I'm Zifoin.
I'm Axel. Hello, guys.
Once again, we're back.
Hello.
Good to see you guys. Last episode of the year. It's been a whole year.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Not us.
We have a very special guest later on in the episode. We'll get there when we get there. But yeah, about the last year. But yeah, so any thoughts for you guys about the last year and the things that have happened just before this year ends?
Well,
1 year of Sign.
Yeah, the idea was to have a different year than last year, but I think it hasn't been different in that sense more than the actual Sign Radio Show, because that has been a big difference in my life, at least.
A good one, I hope.
Yeah. Most oftenly, yes, that's good.
Planning slots is always a bit of a drag, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and I felt it was taken longer to record these, but I thought I would have guessed that it was more episodes, but probably just because we split recordings up, but it's already a year. It's pretty crazy that it already passed. So
yeah, don't give away our secrets. And we've done episodes before, Axel. I feel that I must say again, it feels like a different life to me, like the first Sign Radio shows. It feels like, yeah, it was like I was a different person back then, but
Actually, I was wondering yesterday about the number 19, and I was like, episode 19, why 19? Were you doing this in the year now? Oh yeah, that was a time before that.
That was a man before time. So no, I think it's been great as well, especially like tons of great guests. Like I really enjoy speaking to a lot of these people and getting to pick their brain. I mean, I think that is what the Sign Radio Show gave us, and I hope it gave it to you, our dear listener, as well. We very much appreciate you listening to our episodes.
Yes.
And give us feedback, and I will say I get some feedback here and there. After our last episode, when I said I was dabbling in cable, Spender reached out to me.
Ooh.
And offered his help for me learning cables, and I joined the Discord. So that's my Christmas holiday project, will be figuring out cables. So thank you for that, Pander. I really appreciate it. But I love hearing from you people. There were other people reaching out as well. Like, we love to hear from you, that you enjoy the show.
And people have really enjoyed the last episode for certain. I mean, the IQ interview was really, really good one, though, as well.
Yeah,
it was great to have
that,
him.
Yeah.
So that was great, and I think we have some last parties are still happening, I think. Zifford, you mentioned a little bit before.
Yeah, I actually got caught wind of something the last couple of weeks. I mean, we had Transmission 64, it was a Commodore 64 party, all done online, as
still
most of the things
this
are.
Year?
Yeah, still in this. But it was really great. They had a couple of really interesting DJ sets, even. They put Hoffman in front of, his mixer, of course, with only SIDs. And he did a like crazy job as always. So,
Hoffman? It's getting annoying, Hoffman. At
yes.
this point, mm-hmm. we're getting a little bit sick of you. No, yep. It's fine. We love you,
of course, and keep doing whatever you do. So it's just the great way to keep the scene flowing, really. Now, but it was some really, really good releases as well. And I do know that this weekend there's been Tokyo Demo Fest. I have missed that one, sadly, because, it's on the other... Another time zone. Another.
Yeah, it's during our day. I said, second, since it's the weekend of recording this Tokyo Demo Fest, I'm hearing great things about it. I heard Lugubre was playing, and there was some insane stuff happening at the Shady Showdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to definitely catch up. So I love that it's still happening. And indeed, as you said, 2020, 2021, online parties. We had a few IRL parties, which is great. But I'm happy that we still get to do a bunch of online parties and still keep it going.
Yeah.
And I guess at the moment, they are tracking back to not being physical parties, right? Or is there any tendency now for the upcoming parties that they go switching back to online only? Or have you heard anything?
They are postponing a bunch of parties again, that's for sure. I know that GURP, for instance, in Sweden was about to happen, I think it was January or early February. That's been postponed now as well, so because of the new regulations and new restrictions and stuff. So
and under construction as well, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't look good like anywhere or basically everywhere. It doesn't look good, so it's we'll see for 2022.
Yeah,
fingers crossed what will happen. But it's great that we get to do at least some communication online and be creative and listen to radio shows recorded to you on the internet.
Yes.
So anything else we should do in this intro? I think we should just maybe cut to our very special guest for our interview.
Yes, we should. And we're meant to have two guests. Half of them didn't make it this time, so.
So shall I do the introduction?
Yes.
I'll do the introduction. So it's a really, really special edition for us as hosts. Because pretty much a year ago, we were asked if we could imagine bringing back Design Radio Show. Axel was asked, like, hey, that thing you did a decade ago. And the reason that it actually happened was because of Gargai and Gloom. Well, Gargai prepared us with topics, guests, and questions to kick things off. And then Gloom took care of the audio side, and he would edit and clean up all me talking over everybody all the time. And edit it into a proper podcast. And I think it was very successful. So since they told us they will step down and hand over the radio show, their promise was a year of radio show, and hand over Design Radio Show to a new team, we thought we definitely can let them sneak out silently. So we have designed the Spanish Inquisition with Gargai, because unfortunately Gloom couldn't make it. But we have Gargai on the show as our guest. Welcome.
Welcome.
Hello, happy to be here.
Yeah, are you really? That's a big question.
that's what you wrote on the screen for me to say.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah, it's from the man behind the scene, but the man that made it happen to the man. It's very nice to have you to talk about this last year.
Yeah, actually, I remember exactly on December 7th, I had to look it up actually in the chat, that you approached me whether I'd still be up for making the Sign Radio Show. And I said, well, I don't have any clue anymore about the scene, but if that's not an issue, then of course we could go for it. What was
Since when's that an excuse?
Yeah, well... what was the starting point for you? What did make you come up with the idea to resurrect the radio show?
So it was a combination of many things. The first and probably biggest one is that I've been sort of banging my drum for years about how we've stopped having what I charitably call meta content in the scene. Essentially, what used to be disc magazines and opinion blogs and stuff like that. We just stopped. They just died out. And there's nothing. When you release a demo, when you make a party, when you have an idea, there's no way to communicate it in a way that's concentrated around some sort of medium that a lot of people pay attention to. Sure, you can open a Twitter thread and tweet it out and stuff like that, but it's not the same as having some sort of dedicated source that has your name and brand on it, not necessarily because of the brand, but that because there's value in anticipation. I think one of the big things about the podcast is that when we said, like, okay, we're going to do this every month, people look forward to it, and they knew that, okay, we're under that time, there's going to be a new episode out, then they look forward to it. The same thing happened with disc magazines, right? You knew that it would be around that week, and then it would show up, you'd get a bunch of sort of content, and you'd just sort of subsist on that until the next issue, right? And I think we lost that. And with that, we just lost the long-form thought content where people who have interesting ideas and people who have a lot to say, they just don't really have a way to say it. And then I think discourages people from actually saying it. And I think the interviews we did, like, we always knew that people like Ferris and IQ and Nobi are like these people who have like great thoughts and great things to say. It's just no one really asks them, right? And I think that was a disservice to the scene of like, why not ask, you know, Flopine about what she thinks about live coding? Surely, there's more to it than like just what we thought it was. And we were right. What we're doing here kind of is a bit of course correction, but I think it that we can't just do everyone's job. It's just it's supposed to be an example. Now, another thing was, of course, so I've been doing you know, remote working, working from home for the last 5 years now, way before the pandemic. And I started getting into podcasts. And I'm not sure why. I think it's because when you work from home and alone, and you just kind of, you need the human speech element that you're used to in the office. And I started listening, and I basically realized that there were all these, like, really good, like, what I would call current affairs podcasts, like Stay Tuned with Preet, that kind of stuff. They're just really good listening in terms of, like, here's a person who's very knowledgeable. He gets another person that were very knowledgeable about the topic. And they just take it apart and think about it and address great questions, you know, with a bit of humor, with a bit of topicality. So it's just great listening. It's you know, if you've ever been a fan of, like, Jon Stewart on The Daily Show kind of content, the interviews, it's just good. And, like, why couldn't we do it? And it seemed like a logical step. And of course, you had the podcast, like Design Radio Show, in its original form, which really just felt like, okay, there's two people, let's just press record and see what happens. And if we run out of ideas, let's just put a music track in, right? Which at the time, we never really knew what the podcast as a concept was. So, you know, as an experiment, it worked. But I just thought, like, why don't we take that brand and that idea and that you know, mechanic and try to do it a bit more serious and a bit more focused and a bit more, you know, meaningful and longer lasting, and something that might actually introduce, like, if you show any of these podcast episodes to an outside person, I think they would be entertained even if they don't have the full context of what it's about, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the hope. And of course, you know, when the pandemic happened, suddenly the entire scene was shepherded in the Discord, and, like, your Axel's name started popping up, and I was like, oh, that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. I haven't heard that name for a long time. And if you go back in the demo scene Discord, you can see that when you popped up, I did publicly ask you and Oki to start doing podcasts again. And of course, neither of you dared to answer. So,
damn right, I probably didn't even see it.
No, I think you did. You just don't want to admit it. But I think so. I just started thinking seriously about it. And of course, like, every time I have a project idea, I just glow up to gloom because we've had a great track record of getting things happen. And he's one of the people, like, if he doesn't shoot the idea down, then I know it's 100% going to work. Because we have such different view on things that if we can't agree on something, then it's probably, like, a killer idea. And of course, like, because he's been producing podcasts, like, outside the scene as well, like, I knew that he had, like, the ideas and knowledge of, like, how to do it. I could have Googled it together, but it was a better idea to just ask someone who already knows. Which is a funny thing, by the way, because usually when we do projects, he's the one with the direction idea and the idea and the semantics, and I'm the one who does the technical execution. And this time it was the complete opposite.
That's interesting.
I love that. I love that as well. The difference in approach is, like, that will make it work. Like, if we're both on the same page, then we can make it a success.
Hmm. And what were the discussions that you had at that point? About the podcast, is there exchange about ideas, or what kind of direction to give it, or was it just the format itself, how long, or where it would have to be distributed?
I think it's because it was a topic that sort of both he and I mentioned every so often. I mean, if you remember, he was involved in the Design Disk Mag, the next generation as well, the Windows generation, and I think we were always on the same page about, like, this is the sort of content that we need to produce in terms of rounding out the ecosystem of the scene where sure, you know, there's demos and parties and people seem to love both, but, like, what's in between? What's filling out the time between the parties? Like, of course, now we have parties pretty much every weekend, right? Especially now that with the pandemic, all you need is a Twitch account, right? So maybe even that, maybe just people on Twitch waffling is our new Disc Mag content. But the hope was, like, surely the scene is complex enough and has a storied enough history and is versatile enough that people can do like an hour and a half coherent conversation.
You think it fills a gap that between the daily Discord chatter that it's hard to navigate through, you might find interesting discussions there, but it's if they're gone in the chat, then they're lost, that you would basically distill them into a podcast that has more substance?
It's the focus that's the difference, because with the Discord chat, it's like rewatching a live Twitch stream where, sure, there is interaction, but there's the live element is very different to watch back. It's like watching a football match back from video, you know. Whereas what we do in the podcast, the hope that I had was that because we prepare for it and we sort of have a structure laid out for it and we have this plan of what that we're going to talk about. It's a more laid out and planned and curated version, which means that it's easier to digest at any point, and you can re-listen to it because it's such a good listening. It's not just that weird stream of consciousness that a Discord chat would be, which is fine because that's of course a different thing. Someone just has an idea and there's a and then ends up having a discussion with 10 different people. That's fine, of course. But what I'm talking about is like, if you can take a person who is very knowledgeable what they do and give them an option to elaborate on it and really lay out their argument about something, then it's usually something that is just great listening. It's a much better content.
And do you feel after a year of doing the podcast that we succeeded in that, actually, as the producer? Because you've been known to be stern, which is good because you need to get us all in shape. And I'll admit, like, it's not easy to, like, make sure that we're all different kind of personalities to, like, get the content out that you envisioned.
I think so. Yeah. I'm very happy with the episodes. I think we managed to do what... See, so there's two ways to look at it. The one way is did we fulfill with these 12 episodes what the vision was? And the other way to look at it is that, like, do people like it, right? And then that's usually completely different.
Yeah.
Because especially, like, with sort of this sort of more thoughtful content, sometimes you talk about what people don't want to hear, right? Which, I mean, we talked about, like, you know, ethics and nostalgia and all these kind of things, and very touchy topics, but of course, you can approach them in a way that is respectful to all involved. I do think we ended up doing a good job on setting the standard, you know, of like here's a way to do not just discourse but like research and just presentation, I guess.
Yeah, and indeed, like, respect as well, as I think is like you want to the topics. Especially the ethics and nostalgia topics were difficult topics to talk about. I think for all of us as well were personal opinions and everything. So it's you don't want to step on too many toes. You don't want to make it too heavy.
Yeah, they're emotional topics, but also like surely they're the elephants in the room, right? Like these one of those things. There's many of those things where there is merit in actually stringing together an hour and a half worth of conversation or an hour worth of conversation about it.
Yeah, I'm proud of that work we did, to be honest, speaking for myself, as I would have never dared to touch that. And then helping that push, I think, was good to indeed discuss the elephant in the room.
And also worth mentioning in this whole, I mean, you have been guiding us to topics, towards topics, but then basically all the discussions around it has been sort of organically popped out and popping up as well. So even though we've been directed by you, we haven't been dictated by you.
Yeah.
Which also makes our own opinions matter, because we have been a bit argumentative from all sides in some of the topics, that's for sure.
Yeah, the way I approached it is like everyone knows that these are questions that everyone has. So if I, in the draft that I write, point one of these questions out, then either of those three people who are in the new view we're going to go, oh, I never thought of that like that, that way. And then that's it in itself is 15, 20 minutes of discussion, right? So it was really just like, what are people not seeing in this one specific topic?
Right.
What's the question that do you feel like was never asked from this person?
Yeah, that was an important thing of like, everybody always asks the same questions, or you talk on demo parties about these things, and then that question that is different. And we had guys react to like, oh, that's interesting. That's a take I didn't expect. It was good.
Yeah, there was a lot of times where I would prepare a thought pattern for an interview, and then the guest would completely just talk against it, which was fine, because like, sure, we had our ideas, but apparently it's not the way that it works. But also at the same time, like the first interview we did with DFox, the whole point was like, sure, everyone likes revision and it's fun and everything, but like, what goes on behind the scenes in terms of just getting this thing happen? Yeah. How did it come together? Surely it couldn't have been as easy or as they made it look like, which they made it look like, made it look easy, right?
The German way.
But it was probably absolutely hellish behind the scenes. It's like, why not ask about that?
Yeah.
It's, you know, I would hesitate to call this journalism, but it is adjacent.
Yeah, as we get to that point, indeed, of like, but it's, I guess, in the broad sense of what journalism is in this day and age, is the same as people doing deep dives on YouTube and like long form articles about certain topics, and they can be incredibly interesting. And I think that is, and I found it sometimes intimidating when you had prepared a list for us of like, this is kind of a direction, and I felt like I had to keep to it. I hope we didn't stray too much, or it was in the end, you felt like sometimes like a disappointed teacher going like, guys.
the thing that sometimes didn't quite come out, and it were usually saved by the edit, was when you broke the order of the questions, because I usually, when I prepared a draft, it was like in a logical sort of sequence of things where the question sort of prepared the ground for the next one. And then you just jumped around because you scrolled over.
Or sometimes it just feels, this is maybe the bane as well, I don't know how excellent is for you to see that, but sometimes you feel like it's going in a certain way, you don't want to miss anything, but you also want to kind of segue into, this might be interesting now to follow up, and then you miss something, like, ah, shit, I missed it.
Yeah, exactly, because sometimes the guests, they answer, they give you answers that is already like the next fourth question or something, and you jump automatically to that point because you want to keep that thought going that the guest has, and then it's difficult to go back to earlier questions. But
we're giving away a lot of our secrets.
Yeah, but actually, this is something that might be interesting to the audience. Can you tell us a bit about how you went about producing or you know, coming up with a script with a guest idea? Can you explain a bit how you went about things for each episode, Gorgon?
So the first thing was that when we started out just planning it, before I think we even recorded the first episode, it was just like, okay, I'm just going to write all the ideas that I would have, just random single 2-3 word concepts in like what I called the idea bin. And they were not formed in any shape, you know, they were just like, oh, let's talk about game development, let's talk about tiny coding, let's talk about, you know, like just any sort of topic. And then some of them made more sense than others. Some of them were a bit more available. And of course, like there were situations like the ethics discussion where you're like, okay, this is the topic of today because that's what everyone's talking about. So we have to address it. But it was usually just like a combination of like, okay, there's all these ideas. Most of these ideas you can attach to someone who's very knowledgeable about this topic. We can see if they can approach them. And then I'm almost using this sort of mind map technique where, again, I just jot down ideas that are extremely raw and just thoughts that about this topic. And I just write them down. And eventually, if you write enough of them down, a structure will start to come out of like, how would this discussion make sense? Where you can start and where you can end this? What are the topics? And then it's basically just a bulleted list of raw thoughts. And then I keep adding like sub-bullets to like, okay, but here's a question about this particular point. Here's a question, or here's an afterthought. Here's a follow-up to these particular thoughts. And then just sort of I don't think about it too much at first. I just sort of blurred out a bunch of ideas on paper, And then, as I said, like when you write a bunch of things down, it starts to take shape as you write them, because you suddenly see them and start to, you're able to organize them.
Right. So maybe also to explain some more about this, well, you send us usually a script that we have, that we can go through and maybe add to it. And that's basically how we get the preparations for each episode. And then we add our spice to all the thoughts, like pretty much a day or at the same day of the recording.
So I wouldn't call it a script. It's more of a draft. It's basically like a skeleton of a conversation. I usually share it with you. I really didn't want to share it with you too early, because then you just get buried in it. Mm. So I usually give it to the hosts 2 or 3 days in advance, just to be able to, like, okay, they can think about it for a couple of days or make notes and stuff like that, but they don't marinate in it for like 2 weeks and then completely get bored of the idea.
Mm. What did you think was the most difficult part in all of this, in the preparations?
Oh, the timing, easily. Just getting 3 people in the room together.
Yeah.
That's I didn't realize that, like, people in lockdown who don't leave the house are so hard to get in front of a microphone.
Who would have
thought? That was easily the hardest part.
There's people with, I think people with families, is like, that's an extra added bonus of planning hassle.
Mm, a layer of complexity that you don't really think of unless you're in the middle of it. Because, I mean, for this recording session, I said, well, we're going to record on Sunday at 11. And got the word from the missus, like, so you're kicking us out of our bedroom on a Sunday when we have the time to actually just relax. I was like, yeah, that's good. Okay. So, yeah, it comes with some certain complications, that's for sure.
And now multiply that with 3 people or 4 people.
Yeah.
Looking back at the year, you're happy with how it turned out, but did you have also higher goals that you would have thought that maybe we achieved this or that?
So the thing that I think I was hoping that didn't happen was that it would become autonomous. In terms of, I was hoping that we would, Gloom and I would kickstart it, and then it would carry itself rather than us having to drive it as much. Like, I was hoping to become more of a catalyst rather than someone who's actively running it. And the moment I realized that, like, okay, I don't think I want to do this for more than a year was the Puet thread about the show where everyone was just gushing over it, right? And like, that's great that people like it. But then you three went into the thread and it's like, oh, it's all because of these two. And I was like, oh God, no, that just, that was a display of like abject rejection of responsibility. That's like, yes, this show only exists because of you two. And if you don't do it, then it won't exist. And that kind of said, like, okay.
That's interesting, actually, because yeah, actually I didn't even see it from that angle, but yeah, it makes sense now that you actually see it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the credit where credit is due can backfire, apparently, because, I mean, that was my intention with my comment as well. And even though I must confess that I wouldn't have been part of this unless you guys have been driving it as much as you do, but it still feels like there's a possibility to add my flavor to when we're discussing things anyway. But yeah, I think it would be harder for me to have this driving unless there was someone at least nudging me to do it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't really have to be driven all the way, but nudging is important.
It's worth mentioning, like, in this particular episode, I actually threw the reins behind in between the horses and said, like, okay, if I'm going to be on this, then you three are going to write this. Mm-hmm. And it is possible, right? You done goofed, you showed that you can do it.
Yeah. But I feel I have to agree is that I would have never thought of bringing back Zion or doing a podcast. I was like, yeah, whatever. And that, like, kick you gave of, like, hey, let's do this because I have this specific vision for it. And I admit that I sometimes find, like, oh, I have to do this and I don't really feel like it today. And I always had a blast doing it. Like, it was always fantastic. But the lockdown, like, it has... It hit us all in a personal way as well. So yeah, it's that whole thing of like, we're doing it for a year and then I'm stepping away and hopefully somebody will pick it up, it kind of made me feel like I want to keep continuing this as well, because it was so good to do. So I feel like we owe it to you as well. So I think in that aspect, I apologize for like you having to push us, but I think it will really help in the future and with the people that we got in, which we'll talk about later.
The weird thing is, of course, like recording itself is easy because you just get into the headspace of like a conversation and you just completely forget that you have a microphone in front of you, right? But it's the in-between parts where you're like, okay, what do we talk about, right? And especially where you have such a difficulty getting those people in the same room, you have to be really on point with the planning and the discussions and stuff like that. So
yeah, it does feel starting from scratch for every new episode, doesn't it?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Because, you know, most of the... First off, like, from the three of you, Oki is the only one who actually gets involved in, like, on a daily basis with parties with stuff like that. So, like, current news and topical issues are, like, out, essentially, in the sense that like... You can't have a half an hour discussion about like, oh, did you see the Evoke Demo Compo? Because all three of you will just go, oh, no.
Yeah.
And that did, like, clearly that doesn't work. So there has to be more thought put into like, okay, well, we're just going to break a section off the scene and talk about it.
Yeah. And prep and think about it, because it made me think about stuff a lot as well, which was a nice thing for me to like actually delve a bit deeper. I found a lot of the interviews, as I said before, like, for myself to do as well, very nice to pick somebody's brain and actually delve deeper, and especially with IQ and with Nobby. It was a really great interview, in my opinion, of like just delving a little bit deeper into what does make somebody tick, or how do you feel, especially about the topic of direction with Nobby. Was such a difficult topic as well.
Yeah, but like, how is no one talking about that kind of stuff? That was my thing. It's like, it's such an important component. But then no one seems to be talking about it, and part of it is due to what I said is the lack of long form content. We don't have video essays and we don't have blogs anymore. We don't have, you know, the three-headed squirrel and whatever those blogs were. We don't have disc magazines where you have, you know, 20 articles talking about the scene just conceptually, not necessarily because of like, okay, here's what happened at whatever party. Just talking about like, hey, here's how I feel about how voting works at parties. Here's how I feel about, I don't know, dragons and depictions of naked women in demos. You know, the all topics that should be, you know, something that like could be reevaluated every so often. Like the same way the ethics discussion just brought up a bunch of stuff that was clearly under the surface, right? But there was no way to actually platform someone who's, you know, lived through most of it.
Yeah.
If there's any takeaway from us doing this podcast, is that like there is clearly room for it. And I don't think we're territorial about having a podcast. Like, I definitely wouldn't be, and I don't think you would be either. Someone wants to start one that's not just, you know, random Amiga tunes mixed together for half an hour, which they have their merit, but I think music podcasts and music in general, we have enough web radios to fill us for a year, right?
Mm. Oh no, but if people want to make podcasts, yeah, please do, like, start podcasts.
Yeah.
As you hear now, it's very easy. You just need like a really good producer to help you out.
And nerves of steel, yeah.
Yeah. But no, fair enough, absolutely. There's people saying like, as well, like, oh, what we should or should not cover. I think there was some discussions as well, like, oh, why are you talking about that but not that? It's like, well, yeah, because there is a certain...
I honestly didn't get any of that feedback. I think at least not to me. I a few people I've talked to, but and then they usually just wanted to talk about like one very specific thing that I think would have made like a 10-minute discussion. And I usually argued like, is this something that you can talk an hour about so that it doesn't bore, you know, a person who doesn't necessarily know about it? Like, you can talk about, I don't know, certain types of coding that will probably irritate graphics artists and vice versa, right? So it is. There's always a mild pushback of like, okay, what's the angle here? How do you make this interesting for the general audience?
And that we also don't want to be a advertisement platform. I think that's also a very important part of it, is where you were very adamant about as well. It's like, we're not just here for somebody to promote their thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Revision was a different beast in that sense, because that was the only time where we talked about one specific event, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Revision is a specifically special thing in that first off, they were the first one to pull out this sort of online thing. Secondly, they're the biggest one to pull off an online thing. I think there was merit in, and I don't think we necessarily talked about it in Revision terms. I think we talked about it in just online event terms, yeah. Not necessarily Revision. But yeah, it's important that, like, there is, there was a great line in the book about Jon Stewart and Daily Show where he said, like, one of his producers told him that it's okay to create a show that has an opinion without bias. There's a difference between having an opinion that you can have someone challenge on the show itself, whereas you shouldn't have a bias in a sense that you're not promoting something, you're not selling something, you're not trying to push a very specific thing, but conceptually you can have a stand on things.
And we did. I think that's because there was some advertising.
Actually, oh, you mean your constant mention of Pooh Brain and Booze Drome? There's some great drinking games with the podcast. Pooh Brain mention is one, Booze Drome is the other. Every time Oki starts a sentence with "so yeah."
So yeah. I apologize. I tried to like cut that back, but there was, because I felt Pooh Brain references sometimes were topical for certain things we were talking about, but maybe it's because my circle was quite small in that aspect, and they were the first to pop in my mind. So I agree. I apologize.
Nope. For whatever reason.
Did you expect the show to generate more feedback from the scene itself, or that it would create a small community, or that you would hear the scene more?
Here's a funny one. You know, at the end of the show, there's that little burr where it says, like, you know, don't forget to rate the show on whatever, iTunes. Give me a guess on how many ratings did you think we get? And I'll give you even a clue. It's not zero.
4.
Close.
1?
Yes.
Ah, ooh.
So the audience needs to, you know, pick up the slack right there.
Yeah. So it's not all on us, right?
If you enjoy the show, please make it known.
The funny thing that so the platform that we use, Anchor, is for distribution and stuff. It's really good, and it has like this little back end where we can check. I think they're a Spotify owned company, so they have like extra stats for Spotify listeners and stuff, and we get like demographics and stuff. And what always stood out was how everyone just seems to listen on the web player in the link. No one seems to have like a podcast routine. Like we have like, I don't know, 150 listeners or something solidly each episode, but no one is actually listening because they have a podcast app and it says subscribe and stuff. They just, every time we post the link, they just click the link and press play. Like they just use whatever player the link gives them. They wouldn't listen unless we would tell them to.
The demo scene is too old for the podcast routine. They just click on links that they get presented and they want to download an MP3.
Well, that's not even hard. Like, no one really downloads an MP3 anymore. Even podcast players just sort of stream it from the link, right? But the point being, like if we wouldn't, there was like an A/B test that I did. Of like not posting the link for a couple of days and see if someone organically started listening. No.
So that was a fail then. Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody posted in the Pooh thread like, "Hey, new episode is out."
Oh yeah. People posted for us, sure, but that's the thing. Like, if they wouldn't,
right?
It just wouldn't. No one would notice. The actual fraction of people who actually like get their information through like Spotify and Apple Podcasts and whatever the app they're using, is so minuscule compared to like, here's the link, press play, listen.
Yeah. There's some work there to be done. Everybody who's listening to this right now, share it.
And we've not gotten a single email, by the way.
Oh, that's true. So what's the use in having an email address if no one is going to use it, right? Right, right. Please use it.
I think the most we got was a message in our Discord channel, right? So that was about it.
Yeah, so send us feedback. Like, it's okay. Don't be scared.
No, we're not going to bite your head off.
But on a more serious note, Amanda, like, surely there are topics that you wish there were more talked about. The problem is a lot of the people are like, they want to talk about their little like fiefdoms in the scene, right? Like, oh, you know, I've been an Atari scener all my life, so I want people to talk about the Atari. And they don't necessarily have that big picture overview of like, sure, but like, what's interesting about it that's not interesting about any other given platform? And then not from a technical perspective, right? Because, you know, computers are different, but like, what about that particular scene or about that particular scenario is something that is so fascinating that you could just write a book about it, but you haven't.
Yeah.
Actually, one thing that I learned from the podcast was that I came across people that I didn't absolutely not know before. So you start to, you need to do some research about those people. And I think there's also a big gap, Gargay, between people that you know from the scene, but who are not really good talkers, and others who are maybe more unknown are the ones that are better suitable for an interview, right? What were the thoughts in that regard? Because in order to guess who are the good guests to talk to, you need to pretty much know the whole scene about who's more suited than others, and I would never be able.
Naturally, the people that we had on, they were all people who had I had interactions, you know, with during events and stuff, and I generally knew where they stood on things and how they were able to present. So it was mostly just relying on like personal impressions in the sense that like, yeah, this is a person who I had long conversations with before. And I know they're thoughtful enough that they can present. So it was fairly easy to just rely on like, oh, Ferris, just ask him a question on press record, and then you have an hour of interesting content without even having to interact, because he's just that's the kind of person he is.
So yeah, we've had a lot of interesting chats throughout the year, so just looking for more, and very much look forward to the coming year. And we're also hearing that Gloom is on his way to the studio to jump into this podcast, so we might step back to get back to the topic here, but for the time being, maybe because on a wider note, you guys are generally very involved in the scene, be it on scene org or co-organizing parties, functions, old scope, and we've discussed in a podcast how very few people handle a lot of the scene's up and running procedures. What keeps driving you in the scene?
I think we're just too stupid to quit. I think that's genuinely the main motivation, is that it would suck to quit because there's so much architecture relying on us. That whenever we started, like NV Scene is probably one of the best examples in that sense, because that was one of those like Hail Mary things, like we have no idea if this will work. It sounds cool and it makes sense in our heads, but there's so many things that could go wrong about this. And I can't speak for him, but I think we're mostly just interested in like, okay, what can we do that's not been done before? What's a territory that we can move into that no one's moved into before? I mean, this podcast is an example of that. Like, this format is new, and it was a logical choice. It was a combination of two things, the scene and these modern, you know, pandemic era long form podcasts that everyone seems to have already. It just made sense in terms of that move. Right, and what if we combine these two things? So, in that sense, the motivation has always been just let's what's something that can well, not necessarily break the norm, because I think that's too much of a, it's a bit pretentious to say that we're not like curing cancer here. We're talking into a microphone, but I keep coming back to the meta content thing that, like, why is no one, and that's a question that I could ask from you three, is like, why do you think no one is why is there no, like, opinions in the scene? Why do you restrict yourself to, like, tweets and Puet posts at most? Why is there no, you know, Substack? Why is no one doing opinion newsletters and stuff?
I guess it's, for a lot of people, it's just a hobby that they have, and they feel like, I'm just making nice shiny things on the computers I like, and it's just a lovely thing for me to do. And, like, when it goes deeper, people don't really want it because, yeah, there's other things in my life I'm busy with. I don't want to deal with that right now.
But, like, that didn't used to be the case. Like, surely, up to, like, let's say mid-2000s, which was, let's say, like, the tail end of the disc mag era, surely the same people had opinions and stuff. Do you think it's only just a time restriction? Do you genuinely think that people still have the opinions, but they just sort of shelved it because, oh, no one has the time to actually say this out loud and write this down? Do you genuinely think that's the case, or is it just because of the whole internet ecosystem, everything is sort of so opinion centric, and we get sort of inundated with people. So many people talking about something, but not actually, you know, talking it at length. They just throw opinions like darts at you rather than laying out a longer argument, that you just feel like, oh, well, everyone said everything and there's no point in me actually saying anything anymore.
It's a short form. Opinions are like stabs. It's like a battle of, like, you're wrong, I'm right, and there is no discussion. And I think for demo scene stuff as well, probably, I don't know, I can only speak for myself, is that you get older and maybe also sometimes you have less, like, it's just indeed that outlet for people, instead of, like, back when they were younger, it was their whole life because they were just, like, studying and making demos and it was awesome. Maybe it's a bit of a, how do you say, like, bit of a put down of, like, oh yeah, people just get older and they have families and they don't have a lot of time to also argue about that, and the internet is already so...
The reason I don't necessarily buy the it's just a hobby argument, because, like, sure, it's a hobby, but it's a hobby that involves you doing several cross-continent trips to sleep on the floor after you've spent several days in a caffeine-addled daze trying to get your childhood computer to work.
Yeah, I guess for some people,
like, that
it is.
That,
some
I
people
think
isn't.
That goes beyond what most people consider hobby. Like model train sets are a hobby, but once you spend, you know, €2,500 on it, it stops being a hobby, right? Like, if your model train set is bigger than your bedroom in terms of surface area, it stops being a hobby.
Yeah, I think I really wanted to be like multiple day parties where hobble train set enthusiasts come together, sleep on the floor and build like big train track competitions.
So we're talking about addictions now or what?
But no, I think the thing is that for a lot of people it is that, like, the demo scene has that sweet spot of being a hobby and being a passion and being and having that hyper focus on making something to show to your friends, and it's like an insane amount of time and money indeed and an effort. Where for a lot of people, it's also just an outlet to do, like, when I get home, I'll just go some great 6502 assembly to just get everything out of my head that I've done this day. I've heard people really use it as that as well. But yeah, we're in that sweet spot of, like, I can imagine a lot of people really are like, I just want to make my things and see my friends, and that's it. Like, I don't feel like, and that always has been like this. And it's fine, and we called each other poop faces back in the day, and that's what we still do. It's kind of and where for other people it really is this kind of, like, care. I have that same thing as well, where I care a lot about it, but I also find myself really go, like, I don't have time for it now. in my head.
I think that's kind of sums it up for me as well, because the problem is that, well, in my opinion, it's an age thing, to be honest, because with age comes other responsibilities and everything connected to that. And I don't know, I want to get involved more than I then actually can do because of other restraints. And that's a big problem for me in that sense. And I guess it's a common way of doing things. I don't know. Or not doing things.
Well, you feel sad that you then, I can't get involved, so I might as well not, because I'll disappoint myself by not finishing it.
Exactly.
Which with hi-hat, with songs as well, like with productions as well, as like, I'm not able to finish this in the right time.
See, the reason I don't necessarily buy the age argument is that there's not everyone's the same age. And we keep saying, like, there's not new people, but there are new people. They just don't seem to get involved the same way we used to.
Mm. I think, you know, well, that's very true. But I think, I mean, me and Axel are more of the same age, and Aki being the younger guy here in that sense. I mean, when I got started in the scene back in mid-80s, yeah, just to underline the oldness, that was, as you mentioned before as well, that was basically my whole life. I got consumed by it. It was like, hey, everything goes around creating that. Then I had a sort of a reality dip when I, well, became a father quite early and kind of dropped out of the scene for a bunch of years, but I still kept a tab on it. But I've never reached back into the same sort of mindset as I was then, because other restraints outside of the possibilities in this sense. So it's, I don't know.
And I feel that what you said, like you were consumed in the 80s because there was not much else. Like the world was different, and now we have young people coming in, or fresher people indeed, is like maybe not necessarily young, but new people. Let's say new people. But because there is so much happening and people are involved in so many things, it's not that full. It's not the full attention, and we don't really have that platform. Like, we have a Discord server, people join in and they say a few words, and you see that happen, and then it kind of, like, we have different, like, the great discussions on the demo scene Discords that are around there, but there are, it's a different than back in the day, and we were only talking about it. We would get together with friends, and we lock each other in the houses when parents went on holiday, and built stuff, and discussed stuff, because there also, I'm from quite a small town, there was nothing else to fucking do. So we just went together and made demos. And I think that's for a lot of people back in the 80s and 90s, it was just like, life is really boring where I am, and this is an outlet for me. Where now, people just lock themselves up or on the internet, I don't know, I think we're kind of waffling now as well of like, what is the difference and why?
Let me posit to you that, okay, we don't have disc mags anymore, and I, you know, kind of understand that. It was even back then, it was a stopgap solution of like distributing text content in the ways that were practical at the time. Now we have the internet, we don't really need that kind of stuff. But then we have these new mediums for what I would consider the meta content or critical content or long form content, you know, reaction videos to video essays to, I don't know. And we're not exploiting those. That's what I'm saying is we have gotten rid of the old formats and old media, but we have not replaced it with anything new.
Yeah, because I think with the video essays, it's a very specific scene as well. And because that is also a lot of work, like making, like you've seen these people that make fantastic video essays, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, that recent video by the guys whose name escapes me now about the trackers and how they evolved.
Yeah.
That was so good and so well done and so extremely on point and polished and everything.
And I think the demo scene, because I watch a few people that do like deep dives into video game stuff and art stuff and music stuff, and it's weird. I think that why the demo hasn't picked up in the demo scene. You could do there's great. There's I mean the Tracker one and then the one that C-Trix did about like Amiga mod making.
Let me pose it to you one more thing. Is that like when you splice up the demographics of the scene? Sure, there's essentially people who, you know, organize parties, people who make demos, and there's always the portion of the scene who doesn't either, but usually that was their job, right? To curate. That was people who didn't necessarily get involved. They went to parties and stuff, and they watched demos and stuff. But those were usually the people who just wrote the articles and made sure that the demos got around. Now we have that group of people who just sort of passively consume and comment on Facebook at most, right?
There is a few people that try indeed, but I see what you mean. I find myself having a hard time wrapping my head around the idea of like a demo scene video essay. And it's just like, it's because it's that amount of work and it's that amount of dedication. It's like, I'm going to do this because, and maybe also the audience is too small for like, I do a long form, but it's because trackers is like, it's a more general known thing. But then again, you see guys like Pat Channington doing deep dives into Vaporwave albums, and that scene is not that big. So
when did Vaporwave start? Like 5 years ago?
Yeah, a decade ago. Let's be Macintosh Plush album is a decade old, and when Dad and Saint Pepsi were the first people to kind of kick it off.
The demos were like late '80s. Come on, we have 40 years of content. If you just want a deep dive on just the concept of, let's say, literally off the top of my head, flybys, the concept of 3D animations in demos, where you know there was this big late '90s, early 2000s term of like, oh, this is just a flyby.
Yeah.
Right, which is basically a large 3D model scene with little to no interaction or static or no effects and stuff like that. Just the concept of that, or like the
scenes transition. So many ideas.
Yeah, the scenes transition from, you know, software and then into hardware acceleration, and how there was this gap between, you know, software rendering and very pixel effects and, you know, the pixel shader era, which brought back a bunch of those like effecty style things. That transitional area is fascinating, and it would be a great sort of visual showcase. And you could guide the viewer through those visuals, like, see, this is the reason why they looked like this.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why at this point they stopped looking like this.
You think it's that people just don't care enough to actually do that deep? Because it sounds, I immediately have ideas. It sounds incredibly interesting. Of like when that 3D was so special, we did flybys, and then
it doesn't. I admit that it doesn't have the same amount of date that so the same amount of drama as covering the Fyre Festival. But but at the same time, like, isn't this the thing that you're supposed to care about? Like, as you as your specific interest.
It's just because you make that and you show it to people, and then. And I think comparing it to maybe like a scene like the Vaporwave scene, but it's still a music scene. It's like it's such a specific thing that in the end, not many people know, but people know about in passing. But I'm always surprised when somebody then knows the demo scene. It's like, oh, really? How novel. And is it too niche to have somebody actually dedicate? Because I'd love it, but I already find myself having a hard time getting a time slot to record a podcast. So
yeah, but when you say too niche, you're conditioning the production of something on the audience, not because you're interested in it.
But people that do video essays do. You do make it for an audience. You're not making it for archiving or maybe, but there has to be an audience for it. Like all these people that do video essays are on Patreon.
No, let me rephrase. You're conditioning your production on a large audience.
Because of work, it's a lot of work. I have the feeling that the merit of like somebody dedicated.
Well, making demos is a lot of work, and you're gonna get seen by 200 people.
That makes it so special. I think that is still one of the most special things about the demo scene, is that people put a fuckload of work into something. They show their friends, and it is, and I think it's an anomaly. In that aspect, that there's no other scene where people immediately want to either monetize it or bring it to a broader audience. And even we are like doing the outreach and get it to a broader audience or monetizing it, which still luckily in the demo scene has been somewhat frowned upon, but also somewhat done, I think. And there's nothing wrong with monetizing what you make, but it is... You get to that, maybe that's just capitalism as well. Maybe we get to a very weird point.
Oh, if you want to bring that up, I would bring up the little cottage industry of the YouTube channels that just upload captures of demos. And now that every YouTube video has an ad on it, you can't even tell if they're monetized or not. So
yeah. No, exactly. Is that like back in the 90s, monetizing your demos was the way to go. People just wanted to get rich quick as young programmers making video games. or demos even for money, and that backfired because there was never a way.
But you can't really, you know, come up with more than five examples, really.
Yeah, maybe.
There were, like, we made hay of the cases that happened, you know, Africola to whatever that...
Shortcut.
That, yeah, a couple. There were, I mean, we did it too in Conspiracy with the Intel stuff and
Of course, you got, like, TBL did it with Contour, made a demo for money, Shortcut tried to, like, monetize demos as screensavers.
But I think we just, like, oh, we'll try then and just, like, yeah, this is not fun for either party. So, like, but I don't think that it was as much as a trend as you make it sound like. And I don't think it's an excuse in terms of, like, oh, well, that just shows that, like, there's too much work in making a video essay or a reaction channel. I mean, the reaction channels are a great example because, like, I watch them all the time for the music that I already know because it's such a joy to see someone either discover a song
or just
be happy because it's you know, recently I was watching a guy reacting to the new Halo Effect song, which is a band that's created from members of his favorite bands, like ex-members of his favorite band, and he was, like, over the moon just being happy of, like, wow, these guys who were in the same sort of metal scene for so long and they never had a band together and now they do and it sounds amazing. Imagine someone who has, you know, Amiga credentials finally reacting to, like, Eon, seeing it the first time. How fun that would be.
Yeah.
And I don't get it why we haven't.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, and I also say I don't want to make it an excuse. I also was like, I'm just also pondering. It's like I don't, and that's weird. I can't see it either, and it's weird. You're right. But we have a special guest joining.
Yes.
Hi, Lou.
Hi.
I just heard myself echoing through you, so
that's okay. He'll edit it out.
Yep.
Good to have you, man. And when you think back about the podcast for a year, like, what were your main learnings from it from how you started the idea with Gargai and where it ended up now?
Well, I can't take much credit for the idea because it was neither mine nor Gargai's initially, right? I mean, when I think about Design Podcast, the only thing I remember was I was a guest, I think, once. Like 10 years ago or something like that. I think we discussed Envy Scene or something, probably.
Yeah, probably.
And then I can't quite remember how it came to be, but obviously, as most things in the scene are, Gargai comes to me with an idea. And yeah, I mean, it was a good thing. Like at that time, a year ago, go-ish, something like that. I mean, every white dude was starting a podcast, right? And I mean, looking at your multicolored ethnic faces right now, I can see that we joined the fray of every other person who was in the pandemic and thinking, Jesus Christ, shouldn't we start to lay our opinions on everybody else? And like, yeah, that's a good plan. jokes aside, I think, you know, we, at that time, at least for me, it was a very nice thing to do something else, to find some way to do something scene related, which we hadn't done at all basically for a long time. At that point, you know, we'd had the last Solskogen, which was, you know, thankfully a hybrid event, which we were able to do because at that time the contagion in Norway was very low. But apart from that, you know, we weren't going to parties, at least I wasn't, and when Gargai came and suggested it, you know, hey, why don't we just try to, I mean, it exists already, it never really technically stopped, it just stopped, you know, like it was never like you guys had a last episode and saying, and that's it, and then you lit it on fire with gasoline and it's like, fuck this shit. And I was like, no, it just didn't happen anymore, and it felt like a natural thing to pick up again and start to do. And when you were interested, it was like, yeah, sure, I'll help out, it's fine, it's cool.
And honestly, Axel, you have actually been reaching out to me before as well, like, hey, shouldn't we revive this one on Scene Set? And I also think that Triple X actually mentioned it at some party at some point. So there have been discussions about that to actually reinvent the podcast, at least on Scene Set. But that was 5 years ago, I think, the last time
or something. Quite some time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the only way to do it again was to use an existing platform instead of the whole effort that needs to be done behind the scenes, like with the editing. I always thought it's a huge effort that needs to be done. And I thought if it's a live radio show kind of setup, then it's more of a doable thing. But I mean, workload wise, I would imagine it's a huge amount of hours that you need to put in afterwards for editing it. Can you give us some insights on how that works exactly, how you worked on each episode or so?
The hosts that you're all listening to plus Garga usually come up with, you know, the topics and the themes and the barrage of listener emails that we get that we have to wade through every month in order to get to the nuggets of gold. My part of it is really just being passive slightly in the beginning, like maybe some comments on the Discord that we have talking about what we should talk to and who we should talk to and what we should talk about, but that's about it. But my work starts after everything is recorded. The first thing I do is to splice all of the pieces together so that each host has their own audio file that's complete. And then I run through a process in a couple of audio software to clean up, you know, some room reverb or some noise de-essing, de-plosives, de-clicking, a bunch of things. Because, you know, we're looking at, like, the listeners can't see, but we're using a piece of software where we can see each other while we're recording called Squadcast. And, you know, each room is absolutely horrible, with the exception of Siphoids. and each microphone is absolutely horrible, with the exception of Siphoids. So there is a lot to, and, you know, I approach this as, let's not spend a week on it. Let's spend as much time as it needs to be acceptable to listen to. And I think most people, the feedback that we have, at least, is that it's somewhat pleasant. It doesn't, you know, hurt people when they're listening to it. And that's the goal, because it has to be manageable, because once it becomes a chore, then it's no longer fun to do. So I try to do as best I can to sort of just make everyone's volume the same and run through a couple of compressors. And then I sample that down so that I'm working with finished audio files, because then the final render is easier to work with. And then I start to edit. And when I edit, most of my edits are not editorial. There are some where I take some freedom and sort of, and this is just a random example, if Oki, by any chance, would happen to loop back to the same topic for the fifth time, I might pick, you know, one of the previous times, which were, you know, more amusing or whatever, and stick with that. If I feel that there's like, this horse is so dead at this point, I might cut it out. But very rarely, actually. Mostly it's timing edits, which means that, especially if we have a guest and there's a lot of like, no, you go. No, it's fine. Like, there's a lot of that. And I usually then also move some of the reaction sounds, which you have, which is people saying, yeah. And I move those because the timing is going to be off in the recording. And this, if this sounds boring, it's because it is. But I think if I've done my job right, the end result is something that's pleasant to listen to. And that at the end, you want to go, yeah, I wonder when the next one is coming out.
How long does this take you to do?
It depends. So it depends on how long the recording is. And it depends if we have a long guests. So the Inigo one, which I think was one of the longest interviews we've done, was like an hour 15, hour 20 minutes, something like that in the end. That plus the studio section, which is the section we call before and after the interview. I think I spent about, give or take, 6 hours, something like that.
Much appreciated. It's a substantial amount of time to do.
To be fair, it's my only job on a podcast that comes out once a month, so it should be doable. And if I did my job better, I wouldn't bulk it out and do everything in like one or two nights. But, you know, that's the thing. The call of the daily life makes sure that I have to do other things as well.
Did you guys also have discussions before the recording of an episode about whether a certain topic would be suitable, or is that something that you completely went were left out of the loop there, but I would imagine that you guys discussed topics beforehand sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes we would. Sometimes, you know, some topics come naturally. I think there's been times where we were a little bit topic-less, like we were a little bit aimless, and then we would usually loop you guys in and say, like, hey, you know, are there any ideas for what you should do? What's happened? Because, and I must be honest, I don't really pay that much attention to Demoscene news. So I've actually been getting a lot of my Demoscene news from this podcast while I'm editing it. So that's practical. You know, I've somehow come in a position where I managed to get some of the Demoscene elders to read me the news. I don't know if that tells you.
Dark, I see. That's the problem. That's the kind of the job that we've made here.
But I want to loop back to one of the things initially about the podcast. Like, I think it was there any other Demoscene podcast like this when Sign first came out? I don't think there was.
Not ones that weren't just full music.
Right.
Like, a lot of the, like, BitJam stuff is podcast form, but it's just basically, like, music mixes without any sort of...
So, obviously, Axel, you had sort of a feeling that you wanted to bring it back, and, you know, Garga came in and had the same idea, or basically the same response, but why do you think that there's been... It's been 1 year now, this podcast, and why hasn't there been anything else?
Actually, good question. Garga, do you know that there's no other podcast that popped up in the meantime? Because I wouldn't have the overview of that.
I mean, I don't want to come across as someone who knows everything, but I haven't heard of it.
So if someone of four of us would have, then it would have been you.
There's one that's called Scene World, which I can see the news items on put, but they're very tangential. I think they're more of an 8-bit retro style thing.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, but
they've been going on for years.
Yeah, that's been going on for longer. So it's not popped up the last year, no.
Mm. And I think I want to kind of give PS a shout out with his theater that he actually interviews people. He has a chat with people. More a chat, I guess, than a deep dive. But it's there. I mean, he does a continuous Demoscene like content stream.
And actually, that's big part of the biggest problem with getting something established. Because, I mean, I've been doing SceneSat now since 2008. Before that, 2 years, I was doing slow shows on Slay Radio. But the problem here the last bunch of years have been consistency. To be honest, the last year, the only consistent thing about SceneSat has been the Sign Radio show. That's the only thing. I think that we've done like 25 shows, and out of those, 11 have been the Sign Radio show. Wow. So lack of consistency due to real life timing issues. That's
lack of producers.
It
comes down to that, actually. But you need people. I mean, all of these things only happen if you start pushing people to some extent where it's endurable and not like a nagging kind of way. But you accept the sort of nagging so that you actually get stuff done. I think that is, I mean, with that many people involved, I think that's the only way to actually get to a result, no?
Yeah.
I think the reason why Gloom and I work extremely well together is that we're both disciplined in terms of getting stuff done, like actually delivering, but also disciplined in terms of what the quality of stuff that we want. And I think that's what we apply to this podcast is that, like, okay, very early on we set this bar of like, we're going to do a year worth every month. That's 12 episodes. And, you know, with a reasonable regularity, like we've slipped a couple of times with a week or two, but we did deliver, or well, we will, once this one comes out, deliver the 12 episodes. And because we set that bar early on, we knew that we had a word to go on. So it was necessary for us to be like, okay, we just have to deliver something. And of course, then the quality bar comes in. It's like, what's the absolute, I don't want to say bare minimum, because the bare minimum is pretty high for us, in the terms of like, okay, it's very similar to delivering a demo of like, okay, you have 2 days, you have this much ready, and then you, with the experience you gain over the years, you know that like, even with less time, you know the tricks on how to make something that is better than the what you would have done years ago when you didn't have that sort of know-how and experience. And then just that sort of sticky note on the monitor, that pinned idea of like that's the goal, that's the, you know, the mission objective, that helps the mission objective happen itself.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Discipline is the key word there, of like signing up for it and then saying we're going to do this. And because as Gloom said before, that the first sign shows just stopped. And I don't even remember why. We just didn't do another episode anymore. I think we had timing issues and then it just didn't happen. It just fizzles out. And that's a lot of these things just fizzle out and people are like, eh, whatever. And that is that thing of like, I'm signing up for this. And I think that is also something that you gave us for like continuing, is like, this is important. We need that discipline. And maybe we need a producer to help us with that discipline. And I also feel that, Gerga, you are kind of like giving yourself, like, you don't want it to be like, oh, if it's all because of me, but you kind of need that sometimes to push the discipline onto the others to like get together and do it.
Yeah, but then again, that was a result of like, we gave our word that we're just going to do a year worth of episodes. So it was all of our words on the line.
Yeah.
We are the ones in the end of the, you know, and the end of end credits. So,
yeah, but you know, there's a difference between you saying that and if Oki and I said that, we would probably have to be like, oh, next week will be fine. And you need someone who, no, next week won't be fine. We're going to do it this weekend. End of story.
Yeah, we have Gloom to add it and he needs to have time to do it. So we need to come out on that date. And that is actually the reason, because indeed, that's how we ended the first episode. Like, we'll do it next month. Oh, Vincenzo can't make it. Shout out Vincenzo again for doing the editing work in the first run.
Yeah.
Because he also put a lot of work into that. I mean, needs to be said. But then it just was like, we'll do it next time. Oh, we forgot. And I can see that happen. I think that I now no longer, and when we started with this podcast and you asked me as well, like, hey, you want to do this with Axel? And it was a bit more, it was a serious take. And I was like, I like that idea. And after doing 12 episodes, I'm way more committed to keep it going than back. I was like, let's give it a shot. It's locked down. I don't have anything to do. And I was like, no, we need to do this now properly. Like, it's important.
So now that Garg and I have been involved for 12 episodes or a year, and you all seem motivated to keep doing it, like, I guess you probably touched on the new team that is coming in.
Not yet.
Okay, so
keep that as a surprise for the next one.
Okay, let's keep it
you
as
want
a surprise.
To keep it a surprise?
Okay. I'll leave that at the that's up to the producer. But I think at this point, you know, if people are listening to me and Gary talking about how we committed to a year and then maybe having some sort of slight fear that Axel and Oki are going to slip back into their old routine. And
talking about poop.
Talk about poop and then not talk about poop because no episodes will be coming out. But I think we can at least say that new people have signed on as the role of producers and editors, so this podcast will indeed live on. And then Garg and I will be able to listen to new episodes and have no clue about what's coming, and that's going to be nice. And then when everybody loves the new episodes more than the ones that we did, then we can sit back and say, like, you know, we helped push this baby into the world.
Then perhaps we can actually have two people who are listening to a podcast in a podcasty way and not only clicking the link.
Oh, I do, of course.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, he's the one. Yeah.
I am the one.
But that's actually was a good segue to, like, are you guys concerned about letting it go? Because you kind of helped it grow. And do you trust us?
No.
I mean, they don't trust
that's what
us,
I assume.
But they
both.
Trust the
no on both counts.
I'm not concerned because I think knowing the team that's coming in, I think they're in very good hands. In previous episodes, we talked about, you know, how Gargai does everything in the scene, basically. And to elaborate on that, it is slightly worrying that the same people tend to be involved with everything all the time. And again, looking at the visage of diversity, young and old, you know, and the skin colors screaming back at me from the skin. You know, we are getting up in the years, all of us.
Yeah.
I can say that because I'm one of you. And it would be nice to see someone else come and pick stuff up. And I don't just mean this podcast. I mean just in general things like Poet and Scene.org. like both me and Gargai, well, not Poet to my account, but scene.org at least, and sort of outreach activities and the sign radio show and, you know, a random example, some sort of American demo party, you know, Gargai is involved. We can't have the same people doing initiatives all the time, because then when they run out of steam,
yeah,
then you're getting closer to a very sharp decline, and sharp declines and heartbreaking is a problem for most communities, because then if someone loses that person to look up to, it can instigate a very sort of short stop, and that I don't like the idea of that. So if anything has me slightly nervous, it's that, but that's for the scene in general, not necessarily for the podcast.
That went for like you not trusting us as hosts to like the decline of the demo scene in itself.
I mean, the death of the demo scene has been predicted many, many times, but let's be honest, it is declining.
And if you say like, I don't want to call it leaders, or like, I think it's the pillars. It's like, yeah, people that have supported the construction of like what it is. And I think there's more like than just, we mentioned, there's a few pillars in the demo scene we have. And if they will disappear, then it will fall down and it will be very sad. And it has never happened because the pillars are still there, but it also has never changed. And I think that is indeed a concern the older we get. So if you listen to this and you want to be a pillar, just do it. Make long form video essays about the demo scene, because we need that too.
But I think the thing is, like, neither of us, with Gloom and myself, wanted to become, you know, the pillars, if that's the term of art. It just happened because, like, we just kept doing stuff.
Discipline.
And all of a sudden, like, oh, we're involved in everything. And I think that goes back to what I was talking about, the discipline.
Of
things. And just, like, I think there's a defeatist mentality a lot of the time, where if, with this particular podcast, that I got that impression of, like, if we would announce, like, yeah, okay, last episode, never going to happen again, I think the reaction would be, oh, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's a horrible, horrible reaction. I think that you should be angry at yourself if that's what your reaction is. Because you know it's not the right reaction, but you're just sort of covering yourself in convenience at that point.
Absolutely. I think that's, for a lot of people, always, they're like, it's just a hobby. It's fine. Like, no real life implications if we don't do it. And I think, because there's a lot of pillars in the demo scene, I think, like, just talk about, like, there's a lot more people that actually keep it up and help with that, with discipline, with, like, keeping it going. But yeah, that is definitely one of the problems, is that people go like, it's fine.
Would you say that's a reason for doing more outreach, to actually find more people who might not be familiar with the scene at all and who might become a pillar in the future? Or is that something that is a bit of an illusion?
Well, that's a hard one, because you don't want to outreach to like a 17-year-old college student to say like, hey, look, we need someone who takes care of everything.
Yeah. Please learn all the in-jokes and all the cultural, about 30 years of cultural references and just start tomorrow. Is that okay? No, I think you cannot rely at this point on someone coming in and being so enamored with the demo scene that they want to keep it alive. I think first you have to be part of it. I think first you have to contribute. You have to live the demo scene life, so to speak, because that's what gives you that drive to want to make it succeed or survive, or whatever word you want to use. So I think if someone like PS was mentioned, and there are a few others as well that do initiatives on different platforms, on Twitch or whatever. I mean, I think Luguber is a very good example. Like, he's been doing his music streams and is like a regular contributor to all the live shading coding competitions and all that. Like, someone who's associated with a certain type of demo scene activity. And I think if someone else, if we keep using the term pillar, is going to come along and sort of be someone that drives people to do stuff and make sure it happens, I think that person is already a demo scener at this point. They have to be, because otherwise, how would they be able to do it?
Yeah, and that's the difficulty, is getting into the demo scene in 2021.
It's probably easier than it ever was, though.
It is.
You literally just join a Discord. You join a Discord and read two JavaScript tutorials, and you have everything you need.
Yeah, but
it's also harder because it is a different demo scene than it was 30 years ago.
But is that a bad thing? Like, I mean, I wouldn't.
No, it's not a bad thing, but it's a different thing.
I wouldn't want someone coming into the demo scene in 2021 and going through what we did.
How is it different, though?
I think it's a difference in, how do I say this, what I mean? I guess in passion. I feel that demo scene and Pillars and people that I've been supporting have had a passion for the demo scene from a young age. And that comes back to what I said earlier about there was nothing else to do. You focused on this. And now people come in, have many different, maybe I'm an old man for thinking that, but many different outlets, many different passions, and the demo scene is one of them.
I think that's a good point. But I think the flip side of that is, if I look back at some of my own demo scene activity, you know, almost 30 years ago, like, I could definitely live without the things that I said and did and the way I behaved when I was 15, like, and older, even stuff when I was in my 20s. I sometimes was a dickhead, right?
Oh, sure. No, we're all idiots back then. Yeah, no, that's not what I mean necessarily is, oh, no, that's why I can't listen to the old Zine podcast, because I sound like a twat. But it's, that's not what I mean necessarily, right, being younger, but it's more like being fully surrounded by it and having that kind of passion, this absorbing you, and just like as Zifoid said earlier in the show as well, as like you were, like, it was all you did was demo scene. It was your life consumed by the demo scene. And now people have many things, yep, which is awesome, because there's way more stuff to consume and way more stuff to be involved in, which I absolutely love. But it also makes your dedication maybe a bit less involved, and you're not like that keen on, like, you know what, I'll step in and host, do all this work, like 6 hours worth of editing for a podcast for fun, or make a demo, or make a video essay, as we talked about before as well, as like, is not as common different for the people that were like fully enamored with it. And the people that were fully enamored with it are doing demos and then have other, like, life and things happen, like gloom, you as well have a family. So you also need to balance that in time. So it's all this, like, and then we're back to the discipline of, like, but you still spent that 6 hours, and because you feel like, I want this out there, this is special to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I worry about, is like, there are no new people that have that same ring. People joined the demo scene and were like, oh, this is really cool. But I'm known in my friend groups as that crazy person that can't shut up about it.
Not just in your friends group. I mean, in this podcast, you're also known as.
In this podcast. But it's because I love it. Yeah, because it's so dear to me. And that I feel that it's difficult. And we can't expect people to be like, we feel the same. We want to keep it alive. And that's that worry I share with you, Gloom. And I share with, like, is like, will it at one point step away? So that's why I also feel like I want to push harder for this to be a thing, and for other things to be a thing, and make more contributions where I can. And I'm very happy with the new team, which we are going to keep a secret.
Yeah,
That are people that are the same, that will do a good job, and I feel very confident about helping us out like this. And I'm very happy to have that, because we need that kick, we need that push, we need that discipline. Word of the episode, discipline and dedication.
It turned into a BDSM podcast really, really quick while I was gone.
But also, I'm very congratulatory, but I think it's fair. I think we should, like, it's very much like, oh, are we great? But we are, like, let's be fair. It's been a great year. We can say that. People get so mad now. Edit this out, Gloom. You're in that right now. That's going to go.
I'll put it on the repeat in the end. But I think it's a good thing that it came up earlier, because I think that's what you said now in reference to what Sifad said earlier. It's exactly the thing. Like, you have to be able to just fully immerse yourself in a thing to make it your passion. You cannot have a cursory glance. You cannot skip like a stone on water past something and then just like, yeah, that was cool. But that's kind of the way it's always been. And the reason I'm slightly hopeful is because the other day, after I got the kids to bed, I was switching around on Netflix, as one does, and I ended up watching like a 30-40 minute documentary about people playing Rubik's Cube, and I sat there crying in the end because it was so good. And I was looking at this being like, these people are so into Rubik's Cube's competition, and that's basically what the demo scene is as well. It's the same thing. It's a thing, it's an arbitrary thing that makes you happy and that drives you forward. And for me, that's been the demo scene. For others, it's Rubik's Cubes and, you know, whatever it is, stamps, chess, you name it. Like, there are people out there, and I think this is a personality type thing, that will come into this and think like, this is absolutely amazing. I want more of this. Like, where did it start? And just take the deep dive. But of course, you have to reach them, and they have to know about it.
And it is happening.
Fun fact, I used to be roommates with the fastest Rubik's Cuber in Hungary.
Of course you did.
And he literally had, like, going from 2x2x2 Rubik's Cubes to like 9x9x9. He literally had every single Rubik's puzzle and he had, yeah, anyway. But I do think, just in terms of what you're saying, I wonder if there's like almost like a societal move that is almost like anti-passion. We're so trying to, because of the way our presence is online as people, we're trying to so homogenize and centralize our identities that anything that deviates from the norm, which is, you know, almost like that you know, 9-to-5 work and maybe some hobbies that are very acceptable for everyone, that we lose that encouragement to weird, and it gets filed into 30-minute Netflix documentaries because that's the only acceptable way to present them. Like, almost just like the way, you know, late 90s, early 2000s internet, like MySpace pages looked weird. Everyone had this weird, stupid-looking MySpace page. Now everyone's Facebook page looks the same, and Twitter page looks the same. Even Twitter pages used to have colors that you could pick. And they don't anymore. And with that, this homogenization, I think, sort of kills out that sort of aspiration to be passionate about something that is not mainstream acceptable. I don't know if I'm going out on a limb here with this, but that's something that I've been thinking a lot about, is that when you're so passionate about something that is, we're not even that much outside the norm, but we're definitely a perpendicular way of thinking of, like, here we're using, you know, programming and art, and we're not making money out of it. We're just doing it for giggles, right? That breaks, you know, trips a breaker in a lot of people's brains. Because, like, wait, how does that work? Why? What's the point? I think it's just that, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was more something that was okay.
The internet was that place for it. Yeah, because it's still there. It's still, I mean, there is still Tumblr, is still a weird place. And there's weird Twitter, which is still around, although less. I'm sad weird LinkedIn never became a thing. These companies getting bigger makes it squeezes the fun and the weird out of it. But there's enough weird. But I do feel you, like, the whole, like, what is the norm? Yeah, I think on that note, uplifting end of the podcast.
It's the season-ending cliffhanger.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's the season-ending cliffhanger. What will happen next in Design Podcast Season 3, which will happen in the next year.
But if you want a positive note, just to say, like this is not something that you as the listener can't fix. Like, it's really, all it needs is you to get involved. And I know that's the most terrifying thing, that you actually have to do things. But it's really, like, there's not going to be a deus ex machina just swooping in and, like, all of a sudden demos start writing themselves, you know.
No.
Or podcasts start producing themselves. Be the change you want to see.
Yeah, I think that's a great note to end it on. And help us out with your suggestions. Send us an email at the Design Radio Show at Scene.org. What should we cover in Season 3 of Design Radio Show? I'm just calling it Season 3 from now on.
By the way, that's another drinking game. Every time Oki says indeed.
Indeed. I have a few of these anchor words. Don't make fun of me. Is there anything else people still want to share, or shall we end on that lovely note from Gargai? It's like, be the change you want to be.
I think just to add to that, since Gargai and I tend to orbit around each other, like, we'll die together in graves side by side. But to echo that, basically, there is absolutely nothing special or magical about what we do. We just do it. And I think that's, like, anyone can.
Yeah.
And it's just, you just have to do it. Like, that's the only thing. You need to have some marginal skill on sort of any axis, and then you need to have time. And that's basically it.
That's very, very true words. I mean, just looking at the Scene Set slogan is any year now. that doesn't really work all the way through. You actually need to make it this year, or make it, just make it.
Yeah.
Make it, do it. I think that's a really great note to end. Just do it, and indeed, and also don't be intimidated. Join Discords, be online, go to parties, participate. It looks intimidating, but it really isn't. Everybody's just really happy when you make something.
There's a great joke about a man going to church and praying to God to win the lottery, and he does it every week. And after like 6 months, God just comes back, like, at least buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that if there was ever a way to end this episode, I think that's it.
So I want to thank Gargai and Gloom for joining us in this last episode of the season, episode 12 of the Design Podcast. It was great to have you and get some insights also in the editing process and in what makes you guys tick to keep doing what you do.
Yeah, and thanks a lot actually for all the work that you've done throughout the year. Without you guys, we wouldn't have even thought about probably starting this again. Yeah. So thanks.
And I'm so happy we did.
From our side, for all your efforts that you put into this. So cheers.
No problem at all.
This show was hosted by Oki Axel and Ziphoid. It was produced, mixed, and edited by Gloom and Gargai. They hereby made the prophecy true, and we'll close the door. We'll be back with a new team, and we'll introduce them in the next episode. So we'll be back in 2022. Special thanks to Scene.org, Scene7, and Bitfellas. Send your questions and feedback to designradioshow@scene.org, or contact us on our Design Radio Show Discord.
Or Twitter.
And we have a Twitter. Very good. We have a Twitter at Design Radio Show. Find us on Twitter. Follow us for all the latest news and goss as well. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and give us a positive rating as well. You can find Design Radio Show on CineSat, as well as Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcast. Put it in your rotation or your podcast schedule, please do. And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. We'll be back in 2022.
Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Ta-ta, go yul. Happy New Year. Boo-ray, 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 boo-ray.